וידבר אדוני אל משה במדבר סיני באוהל מועד באחד לחודש השני בשנה השנית לצאתם מארץ מצרים לאמור.
Hashem spoke to Moshe in the wilderness of Sinai in the tent of meeting on the first of the second month in the second year after their exodus from the land of Egypt, saying,
Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Come right over. Take the easy chair by the window. Comfortable?
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Bamidbar. We begin the book of Bamidbar. The first sedra is always named the same as the book. And the music you heard at the beginning, I will tell you right away because I don't really expect anyone to know, is from a game show from England a way back called The Desert Forges. It was some kind of reality kind of thing of tasks given to contestants in the Midbar, in the wilderness, in the desert. Speaking of which, even though we usually speak of the desert as Midbar, the Stone Chumash Art Scroll, which I translated the first Pasuk, read by grandson Devere, also known as Jack Dawkins, also known as the Artful Dodger, also known as a Giants fan. And they translated as wilderness, which is a better description of the whole picture of Sinai. Certainly there is desert there, but there's also rugged wilderness area. So that's Bamidbar. We also have Rosh Chodesh coming up next Friday, which we will bless and announce this Shabbat. Rosh Chodesh Sivan will be on Friday, one day Rosh Chodesh, because Iyar has 29 days. When that happens, the Rosh Chodesh following is only a single day. And we've got Yom Yerushalayim coming up next Tuesday night, Wednesday, before the next show, so we'll speak about Yerushalayim as well. Without further ado, let us say Tehillim Kuf Lamed, Psalm 130. Shir hama'alot mima'amakim k'raticha Adonai, Adonai shima v'koli, tehiyena aznecha chashuvot l'kol tachanunai. Im avonot tishmor yah Adonai mi'ya'amod, כי אמך הסליחה למען תברא. קיוויתי אדוני קיוותה נפשי ולדברו הוכלתי. נפשי לאדוני משומרים לבוקר, שומרים לבוקר. יחל ישראל אל אדוני כי עם אדוני החסד והרבה עמו פדות. והוא יפדה את ישראל מכל אבונותיו. אחינו כל בית ישראל הנתונים בצרה ובשביה העומדים בין בים ובין ביבשה, המקום ירחם עליהם ויוציאם מצרה לרווחה ומאפלה לאורה ומשיבוד לגאולה, השתה בעגלה ובזמן קריב ונאמר אמן. All right, let's try it this way. I want to sort of give an introduction and overview to the book of Bamidbar. In Bereshit, there was a lot of stories and action. Shemot had story and action. Vayikra was basically a couple of stories and a lot of mitzvot. And no movement. What happened was the people got out of Egypt in the middle of the book of Shemot, and they arrived at Har Sinai, at Midbar Sinai, and then at the foot of Har Sinai. And then they got the Torah, And then they built the Mishkan, and that's the bulk of the rest of Shemot. In Vayikra, you have a lot of the rules and regulations and procedures for the Beit HaMikdash, meaning for the Mishkan in that case. And basically, the people were still encamped at Mount Sinai. So there is no travelogue for Vayikra. Bamidbar, interestingly, starts out with a long variation of that very common verse in the Torah, Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe lemor. Here it's Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe in Midbar Sinai, in the Ohel Moed, tent of the meeting, on the first day of the second month in the second year that they came out of Egypt, saying, lemor. So we sort of needed a review of where and when. In looking back, the last things that are dated are the revelation at Sinai and the sin of the golden calf. Not that it's dated, but we know the timing there. And the inauguration of the Mishkan. And here we are towards the beginning of that period, but we're still at Midbar Sinai. In fact, later in the book of Bamidbar, the Torah tells us that the people got their first traveling orders on the 20th of the second month, the 20th of Iyar, which was 2 days ago. Hey, you know, I didn't even tell you that recording the first broadcast, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, 22nd of Iyar and May. Forgot to tell you that part. So 2 days ago was the 20th of Iyar, which was the date that the people had moved from Mount Sinai for the first time in almost a full year. A year earlier, which we announce this Shabbat, as next Friday will be Rosh Chodesh Sivan, that the Torah back in Parshat Yitro told us was the day of the arrival in the wilderness of Sinai. So we have Torah things we read about, we have a chronology and a timeline which we have to understand, and we have our calendar of events, and they sort of all influence us and impact on us at the same time. And what I'm trying to do, and it'll take a little while, is to sort things out. The people came out of Egypt, went into the Midbar, came to Sinai, and that's where they've been for quite a period of time. Now, Sefer Bamidbar, I just told you, starts on Rosh Chodesh Iyar in the second year out of Egypt. And the first year, Rosh Chodesh Iyar, they were on their way from Egypt to Sinai. The Torah, in a couple of chapters, actually more than a couple, chapter 9, will tell us about an event that occurred in Nisan before the event of the beginning of the Book of Bamidbar, which is the census that was taken at that time, to see what's the population that we're dealing with now in this new era of the young nation's life. And then, a little bit later, is an event that occurred before, and then subsequently, a little later, the 20th of Iyar, for the traveling. What they do for almost a full year at Sinai, this is a matter of my speculation, and I bounced it off of two people I very much value their opinions, and I got a green light to continue my speculation. I don't know how that sounds. But it goes like this. The nation was subjected to slavery in Egypt for generations. Then they're told they're getting out of Egypt and out from under the slavery. And they witness supernatural miracles in the form of the plagues and the events of the Exodus and the crossing and the splitting of the sea and the mun, the manna, and undrinkable water that miraculously was turned sweet, and water that comes from a rock, and revelation at Sinai. Miracle, miracle, miracle. Next step is to take the people into Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel. But there's a problem. You can't have a background of miracle, 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 and then dump a people into a real life, everyday living situation without preparation. So by spending almost a full year not traveling, just staying put, studying this new Torah that they were given, learning how to live on a day-to-day basis in Judaism, there still were miracles, there still was the divine protection of the heavenly clouds of glory, there still was the miraculous mun and the miraculous water that they had access to, but they learned how to interact as a society based on Torah and its values and its mitzvot, which they had been given, and they needed time to practice that. Remember, they're not looking towards 40 years of wandering yet. That was a result of the sin of the spies, which hasn't happened yet. They know, or should know, that the next step, however long they are here, what's coming next is a relatively short journey into the promised land. And this almost a year of staying at Sinai and practicing and learning how to live as a society, this is a necessary prerequisite for taking them into the land of Israel. Things got messed up. The journey was not so short because they decided they wanted to send spies, and God allowed it, and the spies came back and turned the people against the idea of going into Eretz Yisrael, and the rest, as we say, is history. But at least at this point, when they had been told in Egypt, God is taking you out of Egypt, making you his nation, meaning giving you the Torah to live by and whatever else goes along with that, and then Eretz Yisrael. But it wasn't then immediately then. It was a process that required almost a full year of learning how to live normal lives, as much as we could call that normal. The book of Bamidbar is not a very happy book coming up. So far, so good. But there shouldn't have been a book of Bamidbar. We should have been on our way into Eretz Yisrael, and if there was a book, let it be called Haaretz, not Bamidbar. Unfortunately, the plan to take us into Eretz Yisrael, even after this year, almost, should have been number of days, became 40 years, and during that time, it wasn't only the sin of the golden calf and then the sin of the spies. There's the rebellion of Korach, and the complaining here, and the complaining there, and the complaining there, and the Zimri and Cusbi fiasco, and another death toll here. It's, you know, we call the book Bamidbar because of one of its opening words. The general term that's used in English for this book is the book of Numbers because of the censuses that are taken. This first parsha of Bamidbar has a lot of numbers in it, and it's not the only part of the book of Numbers that has numbers. But there's another name which we wouldn't use for this book, but it's sort of very descriptive, and that's a book of plagues. We were smitten many times in this book. It's not a happy book. But I say again that the existence of a book called Bamidbar is already telling you something, because it should never have been. On the bright side of that, we have only love and affection for God, who can say through his prophets that he remembers fondly our willingness to follow him through the desert. Zacharti lach chesed nu'urayach, ahavat kilulotayach, that we went after him in the Midbar. So that's sort of a rose-colored look at the Midbar experience, but we know that tough things happen in this book. We don't have them yet. It won't be till Baha'alotcha that we start to see the change, or after, the Shalach with the sending of the Meraglim. A couple of little things. First of all, Bamidbar is usually the Shabbat right before Shavuot. It isn't this year. Whenever we have a Shana Me'uberet, which is a 13-month year, a 2 Adar year, that begins on a Thursday. Rosh Hashanah was Thursday, Friday, followed by Shabbat. In those years only, which is about 10.5% of the time, we will have Bamidbar followed by Naso, followed by Shavuot, and Baha'alotcha after Shavuot. So 89.5% of the time, Bamidbar is right before Shavuot. In fact, what gets a little spoiled is the ending of this week's Haftorah, which is the source of the psukim which we recite when we put the windings of the tefillin on our finger. And we say three times, Ve'irastich li le'olam, ve'irastich li b'tzedek v'mishpat v'chesed v'rachamim, ve'irastich li be'emuna v'yodat et Hashem. It's an engagement, a betrothal of the people of Israel and God. And symbolically, the binding of the tefillin, which is not only on the arm and on the back of the hand, but it's also on one of the fingers, the middle finger of the left hand, or lefties who put it on their right hand. And the verses, two of them, that are recited with the winding of these three winds around that middle finger are, so to speak, the engagement. And then that's usually followed by Shavuot, which is the marriage between God and the people of Israel, and the Ten Commandments and the Torah, sort of like the ketubah of this relationship that we have with God. So this year, it not yet. We have Parshat Naso in between. It's just one of those oddities of the calendar. That's the way it works. So if anyone says, wait a minute, I thought Bamidbar is always before, and Naso next week is always after Shavuot, 89.5%, the other 10.5%, it's not that way. And it's not evenly distributed either. I checked on the calendars, and it works like this. Before this year, we had Naso before Shavuot 3 years ago, 6 years ago, and 9 years ago. But the next scheduled one is 21 years from now. So it's not evenly distributed, but it averages out to 10.5% of the time. So that's one thing about Bamidbar. The other thing is that there is no automatic correlation or connection between our calendar and the Parshiot HaShavua. But if we have a yearly cycle to read through the whole Torah, then the weekly portions do fit into some kind of pattern in the calendar. Of course, with two Adars and double Sedras and separate and combined moves a little bit, but basically you can say at this time of the year, this is what we're reading every single year. And therefore, even though there is no automatic connection, one can't help but make the connection or see connections. And sometimes it's not connections that you're seeing, it's contrasts that you're seeing. And here is what I'm talking about. Book of Bamidbar, out of Egypt, into the wilderness. And we know, even though we didn't get up to it yet in the Parsha, it's going to be a 40-year period during which the male population, adult population, will die out and other bad things will happen. But look at the calendar. We've got Yom Yerushalayim coming up, which is the day that marks and commemorates and celebrates the reuniting of Yerushalayim during the Six-Day War. It therefore also celebrates the miraculous victories of the Six-Day War, which is the opposite of going into a wilderness. It's sort of coming back to the land of Israel. 1 week after that is Shavuot, so even though in this particular calendar year Shavuot is not immediately after Bamidbar, we still know that it's coming. And Shavuot represents, let's do it again, let's receive the Torah, but not mess up with the sin of the golden calf, and not mess up the way it was done in the Midbar, but let's go through this sequence and re-experience and relive the Exodus, the receiving of the Torah, the commitment to Torah, and the coming into Eretz Yisrael. And Shavuot, by the way, is not just Zman Matan Toratenu, the time of the receiving of the Torah. It is also the time of our living in Eretz Yisrael. Hold that thought. We'll be right back with more Torah Tidbits audio for Parshat Bamidbar. Speaking of music that opens the first half of the second half of the show, usually, I'm not going to tell you about this one. Well, I could really, but I won't. But I will tell you about last week or 2 weeks ago. No, last week, where one listener correctly identified the music as that of the old TV series called Route 66. And came up with a, as my mother or father would say, fantafische explanation of how the word root fit in somehow to the Sedra, which wasn't the point at all. The point was simply 66 in honor of Yom HaTzma'ut, celebrating 66 years of statehood. And since I identify with that very strongly, being 3 days older than the state, the 66 was for me too. But I didn't tell you that last week, and I'm telling it to you now, so I don't have to send an email to that listener. Hopefully he's hearing those words now. How you doing? And we'll continue. I was about to say that Shavuot, let's put it like this, in most people's perception, Shavuot celebrates the receiving of the Torah. We identify in our davening Chag HaShavuot Hazeh Zman Matan Toratenu, the time of the giving of the Torah. But there are other identifying features of Shavuot two very prominent ones being the Shtei Halechem, the Mincha Chadasha, which we've been counting towards throughout Sfirat HaOmer. We say, Usfartem Lachem Mi Mocharat HaShabbat, from the second day of Pesach. Mi Yom Haviachem Et Omer HaTunufa, from the day that the barley offering was brought. We count until, but not including, 50 days. V'hikravtem mincha chadasha l'Hashem, and you shall offer a new offering to God, which is the shtei halechem, the two loaves made from the first wheat, and it's one of the rare offerings that use flour that are chametz, and there are accompanying korbanot that go with the shtei halechem. But shtei halechem implies agriculture, implies being in Eretz Yisrael and having a Beit HaMikdash. So does one of the other names for Shavuot, namely Yom HaBikurim, which technically is not the day of bringing of Bikurim, but the beginning of the bringing of Bikurim season, which runs from Shavuot to Sukkot. And even after Sukkot until Hanukkah time, we have permission to bring Bikurim. But again, Bikurim is an Eretz Yisrael mitzvah. Bikurim is a Beit HaMikdash mitzvah. Bikurim expresses the joy in the sequence of having come out of Egypt and being brought into Eretz Yisrael. So Shavuot is the real culmination of the exodus from Egypt, which is Pesach, on both fronts, namely Torah and Eretz Yisrael, which I spent a lot of time talking about last week, or 2 weeks ago, with Shemitah and Har Sinai. So if that's what Shavuot represents, and Shavuot looms in front of us as we begin the book of Bamidbar, we have to see the contrast in what happened and what should have happened, because what happened was Bamidbar, and what should have happened was Eretz Yisrael, Beit HaMikdash, Korbanot, Shtei HaLechem, Bikurim, and we lived happily ever after, which hasn't happened yet. So this is another kind of thought process or musing when you take a look in what Parshat HaShavua it is, and then you look on the calendar. Anyway, back to Numbers. What definitely justifies that name is the fact that we have the counting of the people tribe by tribe. Then we have another counting of the people, the same counting, but another accounting of the people, where three tribes are combined into a machaneh, an encampment, on one of the sides of the Mishkan. And we have a review of the numbers again. Then, having told us that Levim are not counted together with the rest of the people, we have a count of the Levim. And we have that twice. There we have the full population of Levim. Well, not really, because it's males from 1 month up. And that was for the purpose of making the official formal exchange between the firstborns of each of the tribes and Shevet Levi, who now become the functionaries of the Mikdash, where originally that task was supposed to be carried out by a Bechor, a firstborn. Then you have another counting of Levi, but this time from age 30 to 50, to determine the workforce of Levim, because they're setting out on their tasks as well. So you have counting, 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 counting. the book of Numbers. And we're not finished with the book yet. I'd like to play a track from the a cappella album that I introduced last week, the week before. Even though it's after Lag BaOmer and many people are back to listening to music as usual, there are people who hold restrictions of the Omer from Rosh Chodesh Iyar until the days before Shavuot. And I want this to be able to be heard by everybody. The album is called Shehashalom Shelo, and the second track is Vil Yerushalayim. The words come from the daily Amidah, the weekday Amidah, three times every day. Among many other things, we petition God to return to his city Yerushalayim. English translation, to Jerusalem, your city, may you return in compassion, and may you dwell in it as you promised. May you rebuild it rapidly in our days as an everlasting structure, and install within it soon the throne of David. The song does not continue with the ending of the bracha. The ending of the bracha is, blessed are you, Hashem, who builds Jerusalem. We have Yom Yerushalayim coming up, and I want to make something clear, which I speak about a lot at Yom HaAtzma'ut time, but I guess it's time that it needs to be said for Yom Yerushalayim as well. Celebrating the reunification of Jerusalem, which had been a divided city from 1948 until 1967, does not mean that we are celebrating the realization of our prayers and dreams for Jerusalem that have been on our lips and in our hearts and minds for thousands of years. It means that we had in our time a significant gift from God. The victory of the Six-Day War is just incredible, and having been very, very aware and living through it, although not here yet, I find myself telling my children and my grandchildren about some of the things, because we, meaning my generation, heard these things as current events on news broadcasts. And the next generation, and the next generation after that, hears them only in someone recounting the historical events that occurred in 1967, and they are truly remarkable. I just want to add a personal note that I am sorry for the decision to call the day Yom Yerushalayim, because it gives a wrong impression in this country and elsewhere that it's a celebration only in Jerusalem. It's a celebration of Jerusalem all over Israel and all over the Jewish world. But people don't perceive it like that here. I would have preferred some kind of victory, miracle victory, whatever. I don't know what name, I'm not suggesting. But Yom Yerushalayim gives it too narrow a perspective. The day after is called Yom Chevron, but we don't have that kind of celebration that and ceremony that we do have here on Yom Yerushalayim. And it is not at all handled with the national celebratory feelings of Yom HaAtzma'ut. And I think that's unfortunate, because it makes a nice matched set with Yom HaAtzma'ut and Yom Yerushalayim. Here at the Israel Center, we have a festive Shacharit On both of those days, the one that we have coming up next Wednesday, we'll have a nice Baal Tefillah, Hallel, full Hallel with a Bracha, a nice Dvar Torah, and refreshments. But it's just not the same. It's not a national holiday here. It's a work day. It's a school day. Some schools might give off, but most don't, as far as I know, and whatever. The point is that we have a lot to thank God for in what Yom HaAtzmaut represents and what Yom Yerushalayim represents, separately and together. And my point that I started with is that those who think that the reunification of the city is the culmination of everything that we want are mistaken. And those who do not thank God for the events of the Six-Day War and the victories, definitely with God's hand so visible. I mean, I remind people about what happened to the Egyptian Air Force. Israel succeeded in destroying the entire Egyptian Air Force without a plane of Egypt ever leaving the ground. Pilots got caught in cafes drinking coffee while their planes were being destroyed. An army and an air force in readiness has its planes flying in the sky 24 hours a day. And we had more trouble with Syrian air force, but as far as the Egyptian air force, it was a non-starter. And it's just amazing when you read about those events, especially since Nasser was the prime mover of the attack against Israel, and I know that Israel is blamed for making a preemptive strike that started the war, but that's very, very much within the flavor of Judaism and Torah in the form of Habol Lehorgecha Hashkem V'Horgo. We don't have to wait until our back is against the wall to exercise self-defense with caution. We can and did make a preemptive strike, which gave us the advantage and ultimately the very rapid victory, quick victory, in the Six-Day War. So there were things that are regrettable. When I hear the voice that announced Har Habayit Biyadenu, the Temple Mount is in our hands, I get goosebumps, which I'm getting right now, and then realize that unfortunately we didn't carry through on that, and we turned over the de facto control of Har Habayit to the Muslim Religious Council, the Waqf. And we're suffering from it till this day, all these years later. So what should have been done, I believe, it should have been taken over by Israel. Israel is the only country, and Judaism is the only of the religions, that go out of its way to give freedom of access to others. When the Christians came to conquer the Holy Land back in the Crusades, in addition to destroying Jewish communities and killing and plundering and raping on their way to the Holy Land, when they got here and they were successful in their conquest, they made Jerusalem Jewish free, empty of Jews, Judenrein. And when we exercised our sovereignty, or whatever you want to call it, became sovereign in Jerusalem, we went out of the ordinary efforts to guarantee both the Catholic Church and other Christian groups, as well as Muslims, to continue to enjoy our holy sites. I don't know if that's the best way to put it, but the only ones who will allow religious freedom to really be expressed would be the Jewish people, would be the Israeli government. Unfortunately, right now, there is a limit on religious expression for Jews on the Temple Mount, which is an unacceptable kind of situation. And I say this in light of the upcoming visit of the Pope coming up at the beginning of next week. We do things that are really shooting ourselves in the foot, and the world condemns us for it anyway. I see that my timing is over again, so I'm going to cut the song short, but I hope you'll at least be able to hear one round of it. And what can I say? We are thankful to God, and we should be thankful to God for the events of the Six-Day War that saved the Jewish people in Israel, that returned to our hands Yerushalayim and Hebron and Shechem and Yehuda v'Shomron, and wherever else that we have. We are not occupiers of Arab lands. We are in possession and should be in full sovereignty of that which has always been ours. And if there's an end to occupation, it has to be an end to the Arab occupation of parts of Eretz Yisrael. Enough said on that. We, just like the exchange in greetings on Yom HaTzma'ut, is Moadim L'Simcha L'Geula Shleima. We feel strongly that that's the same for Yom Yerushalayim. Rejoice, because Zeh Hayom Oso Hashem Nagila V'Nismachavo, this day was made by God, and we should rejoice in it. And immediately we have to ask Him to return to His city and rebuild it, not with the non-kosher restaurants that exist and many, many other problematic features of current-day Jerusalem, although there are wonderful, wonderful positive things in Yerushalayim, of course, but the day when the Beit HaMikdash will be rebuilt and the throne of David will be restored, and we constantly and continually pray to God that this should happen speedily in our time. I will finish now with Shabbat Shalom, Chodesh Tov, L'Hishtameah.
Berachamim tumushim v'sishkoi v'soicho kashedibarto v'sishkoi v'soicho kashedibarto soichotu.